Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sacred Divergence Radio, with your hostess Reverend Elizabeth on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Listen in every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and join us in the chat room as we discuss music, magic, spirituality, and more.
Sorry for that brief moment of silence there. I had to call in on BTR host 2 instead of BTR host 1. But you all, excuse me, you all are listening to another episode of Sacred Divergence Radio. Welcome, one and all. And tonight we will be having a guest, Phoenix Williams, who is a high priest and reverend in the Karelian Nativist tradition of Wicca, and he will be calling in shortly. And Phoenix has a mental health background, and so tonight's discussion will be about OCD and its various symptoms and how to treat it and what it can look like in different people and all that kind of good stuff. Please be sure to check out our other episode that we had with Reverend Phoenix. it is, let me check it out here. It was on bipolar disorder, and it was, I believe it was episode 57, but please don't quote me on that. I'm trying to scroll back and look. No, it was not 57. It was on or around August 2nd. So if you go back in the archives, you can search for it there. And it will be there for your listening enjoyment. And of course, episode 57, I was right, I remembered correctly. We discussed bipolar 1 and 2 in that episode. And here he is, he's on hold. Let me bring him online. Hi there, brother.
Hey, what's up?
I have a cold.
I hear that.
Yes, so I'm going to pop a Ricola here. And then we can get rolling. Yay for Ricola, Ricola. So how are you tonight? Are you enjoying the supermoon eclipse?
I certainly am. I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to see it because of all the clouds and stuff, but they've departed and have granted me some pretty cool access to the moon right above my house.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you can view it. I am currently having trouble blowing the clouds out of the way here. They were moving earlier, but then the wind stopped. So I've been asking the wind to kindly blow the clouds away. But it has not been complying so far. I mean, it's on TV. I can just turn around and watch it on the football game. But it's really not the same, and I would rather see it in person. you know, because I don't want to have to wait until 2033 to see this again. It's not going to be around for another 20 years, so 18 years, so. Okay. So tonight's topic, we have a special topic, OCD. And so tell everybody first, who might not be familiar with you, who you are and what you do for a living and why you are qualified to talk about OCD in a professional manner.
All right. So I am Phoenix Williams. In addition to being a third degree high priest in our Corellian tradition, I am a clinical mental health counselor. I have my master's degree in clinical mental health, and I currently work with folks who have or are suffering from serious and persistent mental illness. So the people that I work with, they do attempt suicide on a regular basis. These are the folks that absolutely, without a doubt, need medication in order to even get in to therapy.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so the last
death threat. That's pretty serious there.
I agree. The last death threat at work was probably Tuesday, I want to say.
Wow.
So, yeah. And my hope, my goal, my kind of plan is to come up with a model of pastoral counseling and care from a pagan worldview, from a pagan perspective that would hopefully work toward, helping these individuals come to terms with how their mental illness works and maybe see what's going on with them in a different light. Because all the models that we currently have come off a little judgmental show mental illness as a type of disability. And while I do agree that these illnesses can be disabling, I think that if we learn to look at them in different ways, we can find a way to make folks who are suffering from mental illness more able-bodied.
Exactly. I totally agree with that statement. I try always to say I have ADHD and I have bipolar and I have anxiety more than I am bipolar, I am ADHD, I am anxious.
Right.
Because those I am statements can really stick around for a long time. And they can really affect us in deep ways on a spiritual level, on a mental level, on an emotional level, you know, that sort of thing. So,
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Tell us about OCD. What do we need to know about OCD people? I mean, I know that there's like this stereotype or this, I don't know what you call it, but we say a lot that, oh, they're being OCD today, or, oh, she's OCD. She's so OCD, like, she's so bipolar, or something along those lines. I'm not sure what the word is for that.
So the colloquial kind of informal use of the term OCD used to kind of mock or classify someone who is really particular about things.
Exactly.
Which is kind of not fair. So to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder, you have to talk about two separate things.
Okay.
First, we need to talk about obsessions. Then we need to talk about compulsions.
Okay, so what classifies as an obsession?
But obsession is literally a thought in its most simplest form. So an obsession is a repeated thought that happens over and over and over again. And in the case of obsessive compulsive disorder, it's usually a rumination about something negative. They're frequent and upsetting thoughts.
Okay.
And so folks try to control these thoughts by engaging in certain rituals or behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And those are what compulsions are. So your obsession is the thing that you think about over and over and over again. And to control this thought, you are compelled to do something. So
okay.
if your obsession is with dirt or germs, your compulsion might be to wash your hands a number of times.
Right.
If your thought is about security or safety, then your compulsion might be to constantly check locks.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. Counting might be another compulsion.
Like counting anything, or?
Yeah, so counting footsteps. If someone is, you know, really, their upsetting thought is about falling or tripping, then they might count their footsteps to make sure that they're going one after the other after the other.
Right. Wow,
I never thought
that you could be obsessed with falling or tripping.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So some other common obsessions include having frequent thoughts about violence or hurting loved ones. Also, there's persistent thoughts about performing sexual acts that a person dislikes, or having thoughts that are prohibited by religious belief.
Uh-huh.
So those are some upsetting thoughts. And people who suffer from OCD may also be preoccupied with order and symmetry, have difficulty throwing things away, which leads to, like, hoarding unneeded items. Now, it's important to state that folks who don't have obsessive-compulsive disorder also have rituals that they do, such as checking to see if the stove is off several times before leaving the house.
Right.
Sometimes you might forget if you checked to see if the stove is off. Or you might have forgotten, you know, like you might have checked to see if the stove is off, went and brushed your teeth, and then headed towards the door and like, wait, did I check the stove? Then you go back and check, oh, okay, yeah, the stove's off, now I'll leave. And which is
right.
Not the same as OCD.
So OCD, does a person need both? The obsession and the compulsion. So what are you classified as if you have one or the other instead of both?
So if you have an obsession but not a compulsion, you don't have OCD. If you have a compulsion but not an obsession, I'm not even sure if that's a real thing.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm just going over some notes here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely the case that if you don't have an obsession and a compulsion, you don't have obsessive compulsive disorder. The course of disease is very varied. So some symptoms may come and go and ease over time, or they could get worse. If it becomes severe, it can keep a person from working or carrying out quote-unquote normal responsibilities at home.
Right, like if you're constantly at the sink washing your hands, it would be hard to, like, cook dinner or take care of your kids or whatever. I can only imagine what that's like for people.
Yep. And oftentimes OCD is accompanied by eating disorders. Other anxiety disorders. So OCD is an anxiety disorder. And so if you have OCD, you might also have another type of anxiety disorder. So if you're afraid of dirt and germs, you might also be afraid of going out in public. You might have extreme social phobia. And then also this could trigger a really severe type of depression. And then, in addition to these things, folks might try to ease up the symptoms of their OCD by using drugs or alcohol, which could lead to a substance use or substance abuse kind of disorder or an addiction, which can lead to a whole, you know, kind of problem set for an individual. Addiction to try and self-medicate any other mental illness is really, really dangerous.
Right, yeah. I would definitely not recommend that to anybody. Seek professional help. That's
absolutely
what it's there for.
There is another type of obsessive-compulsive mental illness. It's called obsessive-compulsive personality disorder.
Oh, my.
Oh, my is correct. I want to say that it is either a cluster B or cluster C personality disorder.
And what is a cluster B or cluster C personality disorder? I'm not familiar with those terms.
That's completely fair. So personality disorders are clustered according to, I don't want to say severity, but that's kind of the idea. Cluster B personality disorders are, I want to say the ones that affect folks on a larger social level.
Okay.
Those include borderline personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder. I want to say those four.
Okay, cool.
And so they really kind of trash your relationships with other people. It's marked by, you know, pervasive inappropriate behavior in these relationships. Cluster C personality disorders, I'm trying to think back, because I didn't take notes on the cluster C's. Cluster C personality disorders they're the ones that are characterized by very anxious and fearful thinking or behavior. And these ones will include avoidant personality disorder, dependent personality disorder, and obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Right.
Let me see. Let me just grab my DSM real quick.
Sure, no problem.
So, obsessive-compulsive personality disorder is a mental health condition, obviously, but it's characterized by someone who is preoccupied with rules, orderliness, and control.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like obsessive-compulsive disorder where you are obsessed with, you know, you have an obsession, an upsetting idea, and a compulsion, something that you do to kind of make it easier to deal with. But in the personality disorder, you kind of think that the way that you are thinking and behaving is correct. And you kind of like, well, why isn't everyone think like this? So with normal, quote-unquote, normal OCD, like, you understand that your obsession and compulsion are unreasonable. But in the personality disorder, you think that it's completely appropriate.
Wow.
The essential feature, and this is directly from the DSM, the essential feature of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder is a preoccupation with orderliness, perfectionism, and mental and interpersonal control at the expense of flexibility, openness, and efficiency. This pattern often begins by early adulthood and is present in a variety of contexts. Individuals with obsessive compulsive personality disorder attempt to maintain a sense of control through painstaking attention to rules. Trivial details, procedures, lists, schedules, or form to the extent that the major point of the activity is lost. They are excessively careful and prone to repetition, paying extraordinary attention to detail, and repeatedly checking for possible mistakes. So, this is the personification of your classic kind of thought of someone who's anal retentive.
Right.
Pays so much attention to order and details that you don't even understand what it is that you're thinking about or talking about anymore.
Wow. That's got to be hard. I mean, I could not imagine living that way. I mean, I like to pay attention to order and detail, but not to the point where I forget what I'm doing or what the point of the whole thing is. You know what I mean?
Right. So it's like you're cleaning the house spick and span, and you're so occupied with getting everything correct that you forgot that you're doing it because you're having a birthday party that day.
Oh, wow.
Your obsessive compulsive personality disorder might be the person who, you know, has to have all their pencils lined up from with all the erasers facing the same direction.
Uh-huh.
And you ask them, well, why do you need your erasers to be facing the same direction? Can't really tell you. It just is. It's got to be like that. That's the compulsion to make all the erasers face in the same direction, but they can't really name what the obsession is.
So I would assume that in therapy, one of the goals of therapy might be to name what the obsession is?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool.
And then once you can name what the obsession is, you can begin doing work with automatic thoughts and cognitive restructuring to kind of work around, change, you know, the thoughts that are surrounding these obsessions.
Right.
Here's the kicker with OCD and obsessive compulsive personality disorder. People who have this illness are often really high achievers.
Yeah, I would imagine.
They are, so there's an overdevotion to work. They're reliable, but because they're not flexible. Right, so there is no going off schedule and going with the flow for someone who has OCD or the personality disorder.
Right.
They're very occupied with rules and details and lists, so, you know, you can bet that they're always on their A game because they know what's coming up, they know what the parameters are.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to OCD, it's an anxiety type thing. So this lack of flexibility and this devotion to work comes because if they don't do these things, they have panic attacks. Those are not fun,
wow,
if you've ever had one.
Yeah, I've had panic attacks before.
Yeah, so the way that I hear them described, it's actually kind of terrifying. And some folks have even thought that they were dying.
Yep,
so,
I can relate. I have panic attacks sometimes, and it can feel like I'm having a heart attack because my heart will race, and I feel really short of breath, so I feel like I've been running, even though I haven't moved, you know, and it'll just come, like, out of nowhere for no particular reason. It doesn't need a reason to come.
Is there anyone in the chat room tonight?
Afterfove is with us, and he is preoccupied with the eclipse right now, so he's not really participating per se. But
well,
I'm sure that
questions?
He is listening. Do I have any questions?
Yeah.
How can a person overcome this disorder? I mean, my goodness,
so,
this disorder is just huge.
Yeah, it really is. And it's hard to get someone into treatment based on, or depending on what their obsession is for obsessive compulsive disorder. If you're constantly checking locks for hours on end, it's very likely that you could miss any appointment for treatment. And if you have obsessive compulsive personality disorder, you think that your thoughts are correct, so why are you going to go get treatment? And as it stands, you're already a high achiever, you know, outperforming a lot of your coworkers and, you know, students and classmates. So how do you suspect that someone's got a disorder going on? So the first step is to kind of figure out that something's going on, and you'll start to notice. Parents will start to notice, spouses will start to notice that things are a little odd. The inflexibility is one of the things that might get, you know, a couple into therapy or might get a parent to bring their child into therapy. But once someone gets into treatment, medicines can help reduce anxiety and depression from obsessive compulsive disorder and a personality disorder.
Okay, so are we talking about, not antidepressants, that's SSRIs. What kind of, pardon me, what kind of medications are we talking about here?
So the anxiety reducing kind, the kind that you take if you find yourself getting keyed up, the time that reduced your heart rate because of the pounding and the beating in the chest. So I can't think of any brand names off the top of my head because
no worries.
Most of my participants are all on generic at this point.
And what would some of the generic names be, just out of curiosity?
Let's see. So, is one of them, and we provide that a lot, or the psychiatrist provides that a lot. Let's see, what's another one? Ativan. Have you ever heard of that? Lorazepam.
I'm actually sensitive to lorazepam. I can't take it. It gives me hallucinations. Auditory hallucinations. I hear popping noises, like a person who pops their finger out of their mouth.
Mhm.
That's the kind of noises that I hear when I'm on a lorazepam. So, I was actually given that to help treat depression.
Yeah, I guess that is one of the off-label uses. As far as, like, anxiety medications, like, everyone's familiar with, like, Xanax and Valium and Klonopin and Taxol, Lexapro, Venlafaxine. I know that's a generic name, but I can't think of what that's a generic name for. Trazodone is also a generic.
I think my mom was put on Trazodone for her PTSD.
Word. Those are just like some of the anxiolytics. And I guess the beta blockers is another name for these medications.
I was on a beta blocker for fast heart rate at one point.
There's that. And once you can, once a provider can get the anxiety to reduce, you can get them into some cognitive behavioral therapy. What we've been using in my office is, I can't even think of the name right now. I'm having like the biggest brain fart ever.
Chalk it up to Mercury in retrograde.
Cognitive behavioral therapy. What else? Man, it's the one that was created by Marsha Linehan. Why can't I think of her therapy right now?
You can always look it up.
Oh,
dialectical
behavior therapy, DBT.
And how does that
CBT,
work?
CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and DBT, dialectical behavior therapy. So the whole basis of DBT is it's very mindful, so that's a thing. I know that's a buzzword in New Age groups right now. Everyone's trying to become mindful of what they're doing. And, of course, colloquial terms doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of what it is behind this therapy. You know, folks are invited to get really, really mindful about what it is that's going on in their body, what their thoughts are, and so on. And then dialectical behavior therapy, in one instance, kind of looks to challenge what our thoughts are based on, you know, dialectics. So just because one thought might be right doesn't mean there can't be other, more healthier thoughts that are also right.
Right.
So DBT is basically a cognitive behavioral treatment. It was originally developed to treat chronically suicidal individuals diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. But we have been using it to treat people with a bunch of other disorders, substance dependence. We've been using it for depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, eating disorders, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and antisocial personality disorder, as well as obsessive-compulsive personality disorder.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are four components that go along with DBT. So there's the skills training, and that's when folks learn about mindfulness and mindfulness meditation. There's individual treatment where folks go in for their individual sessions with a therapist. And then there's a phone coaching component where you can do some DBT work over the phone.
Cool.
And then there's the consultation team, which is more towards it's geared more towards the therapist, so it's kind of like therapy for the therapist, and it supports providers in their work to work with severe, complex, and difficult-to-treat disorders. So it's kind of like we get to bounce our troubles, our strengths, our failures, and all that stuff off of each other.
Right,
kind
that's
of like,
awesome.
Yeah, so kind of like group supervision. The phone coaching is focused on, like, kind of in-the-moment coaching to use the skills effectively. So if someone's feeling actively suicidal and they call their therapist, their DBT therapist, you know, we'll remind them of skills and run them through a few skills in the moment to help cope with some difficult situations.
Right.
So there's that. The skills that are taught in the skills training that I was talking about is mindfulness. So being fully aware of the present moment. Like, what are you experiencing right now? Are you having those upsetting, obsessive thoughts? The next part is the stress tolerance. So how to tolerate pain in difficult situations instead of changing it. So the stress tolerance is don't run from what you're feeling. Deal with it and learn how to cope with it so that it's not running your life. Then there's interpersonal effectiveness, which is another one of the components. And that's how to ask for what you want and say no while maintaining self-respect and, you know, decent relationships with others. So in the case of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, you're not really flexible. You're not really generous. You're really rigid. So with interpersonal effectiveness, it's like, how do you maintain, how do you, you know, talk about what it is that you want, what it is that you're needing, while still, you know, making sure folks still want to be around you.
Right.
And then also how to become more flexible, more tolerant of what it means to be, you know, an active and positive participant in the relationship that you are a part of.
Right.
And then the last behavioral skill that's taught is emotion regulation. So how do you change the emotions that you want to change? So if you're feeling obsessive because of these nasty thoughts, because, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy teaches us that our thoughts affect our emotions. So if we're having upsetting thoughts and it's making us feel anxious, how do we change that in the moment so we're not feeling that way? And so these four skills that I just talked about kind of work in a loop. Mindfulness, becoming aware of what you're feeling and not changing it, and all the way back through to the emotion regulation, where you do change it. So mindfulness helps you be okay with what you're feeling until you can change it.
Right.
Distress tolerance helps the pain that you're feeling not hurt so much. And then interpersonal effectiveness helps you kind of stop your pain, your mental pain, emotional pain from spilling over to other people. And
mm-hmm.
then there's change. So all of
right.
it is a cycle, and there's steps that you take. And that's what we've been using to kind of treat these disorders that we've been talking about for the past few months that we've been doing this.
Okay, so here's another question for you. How pervasive is it, like the OCD and the personality disorder?
So they absolutely run in families. And interestingly enough, cluster C personality disorders, so your avoidant, your dependent, and your obsessive compulsive, don't really show up that often.
Okay.
There's a whole kind of differential diagnosis that we run through to rule out certain things.
Uh-huh.
I want to say that obsessive compulsive personality disorder is more pervasive in females than it is in males. And I want to say that it's the same for obsessive compulsive disorder on its own. The most recent study shows us that it's probably about 20% of the population, but that could be not quite correct. But that sounds about right. If you do have obsessive compulsive disorder and obsessive compulsive personality disorder, you do have it for life.
Okay.
The thing, you know, what we're working on now as a field is making it so that it hurts less to have these things.
Right.
Because, of course, like with any mental illness, there's a lot of shame and there's a lot of guilt that goes along with it.
Yeah,
definitely. And that's painful to bear. And then there's, you know, the relationships that get ruined because of the rigidity and lack of flexibleness and the rules that folks have to follow, which is also painful. And then the causes are not always completely clear. We can always... we can always kind of look and see or hypothesize that it's got something to do with the attachment that happens at birth, but that's almost like a default now. Like, oh, here's a mental illness. Let's, you know, there must have been like some attachment type thing that happened, but that's not
right.
always the case.
Right.
Also, to correct something that I said recently, the obsessive compulsive personality disorder affects both men and women, but it occurs most often in men, not women.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
So, just want to clarify that mistake that I made. I just found that in my notes.
Yeah, no, no problem.
So, it's, let's see, how do you... So, romantic relationships is one of the big things that, you know, that is impacted by obsessive-compulsive personality disorder because you're rigid with your relationships, you're rigid with your family. Some of the signs of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder are an overdevotion to work. So you don't have time or interest in being around your spouse or your family or your children. not being able to throw things away. Yeah. So not being able to throw things away even when the objects have no value. This is cluttered. Some folks might get annoyed by this. Lack of flexibility, can't go with the flow, can't be spontaneous. That kind of throws romance right out the door. Other signs are lack of generosity. Like, no one likes folks who are not generous. Folks who are stingy and, you know, don't give of themselves is not usually a characteristic that folks look for in a spouse. You know, folks are like, yeah, I want someone who's kind and who's gentle. And no one's like, oh, I want someone who's, like, totally selfish and stingy. Like, folks don't really look for that.
No, not at all.
There's also this, you know, kind of not wanting to allow other people to do things. So there's this control aspect where, you know, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, folks know you can't go out and hang out with your friends. Like, this is where you need to be. Like, you need to be at home doing home stuff, even though, like, I'm not going to be home because I'm going to be at work. There's a lack of a willingness to show affection, which is a huge part of obsessive compulsive personality disorder. And there's that underlying expectation that your partner just knows how you're feeling because they're your partner, which has a huge effect on romantic relationships. And then the preoccupation with details and rules and lists can really drive anyone that's around you up a tree. So those are... So that's, like, one of the ways that it can, you know, impact relationships, especially romantic ones. That whole not wanting to show affection really gets folks.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know. Affection is, like, a huge thing for me, so I totally get that. Like, if my partner didn't show me affection, I would have a problem. And there would have to be some serious discussion. Are you still with me?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that are hard to deal with. There is hope for folks with OCD.
Definitely, yeah. It's treatable, and that's good.
Yes.
I think the hardest part would be recognizing that you have it.
Yes, absolutely. And with obsessive compulsive personality disorder, you think all your thoughts are correct. The things that you are doing are correct. The way that you're behaving are correct. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of like, why isn't everyone else behaving like this? Like, I'm highly organized. I achieve well in school and at work. I know where everything is. I'm always clean. Why on earth am I the one with the problem? And that's, you know, kind of, that's the thought with, you know, obsessive compulsive personality disorder. But once you start feeling that those pangs of loneliness, after a while, what's going on with you becomes really hard to resist, to escape, or, you know, you can't really deny what's going on.
Right.
So that becomes a huge problem, and you can't, like, avoid therapy anymore.
So at what age does it usually show up? Is it, like, any age or adulthood or childhood?
You can start to see OCD in a child probably around, around 10, between 10 and 13. Obsessive compulsive personality disorder is one of those ones that pops up in the early to mid-20s.
Okay. Let's see. What other questions do I have?
So I always joke around. I always joke around with my mom and my family and even my coworkers because I'm one of the younger ones where I work. There's me and there's another social worker who are about the same age. Me being a black man, it's likely that I will have or statistics show that I am more at risk for a lot of these mental illnesses.
Wow.
So I always joke around with them. I'm like, guys, you guys are all laughing and joking with me, and you have me here in your morning huddle, and I'm treating folks for all these diseases, but you don't realize, like, I could go at any minute. I'm still in my 20s, and therefore the window of opportunity for me to just crack up and have one of these illnesses is, like, actually pretty high. And everyone just, like, stops what they're doing for a minute, and they, like, consider how true that statement is. And then they look at, you know, my coworker, who's a white man, and he's like, he could go, too. It's not as likely, but y'all are both on thin ice. And so he looks at me, he's like, all right, you just had to remind them that we could both be crazy, and like, at a moment's notice. I'm like, yeah, well, gotta keep it real. The reality is, if you haven't, you know, started experiencing symptoms, if people haven't approached you about how, you know, how inflexible you are, if you haven't noticed that you have rituals that you have to do constantly to kind of escape these harsh thoughts that you're having, if any of this hasn't happened yet and you are 25, chances are it's not going to be a thing for you.
That's good.
That's good.
I've passed
you know,
that stage, so I'm 27.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And the same holds true for psychotic disorders, schizophrenia. If you reach 25 without having one, you're probably not going to.
Yay!
I say probably because anything is possible in this world, but you're less likely to be affected by those specific illnesses.
Okay, good. So I'm less likely to develop psychosis with my bipolar.
Yes. And that's another, you know, kind of soapbox thing that I'm on being a witch in the mental health field is trying to talk about psychosis in a way that affirms my faith, but still also provides appropriate treatment to folks who need it. Because psychosis is real, and witchcraft is not psychosis.
So let's talk about that a little bit. In our last, well, we have another hour if we want to, but yeah, let's go, let's roll with that, brother.
Okay.
Get up on that soapbox.
All right. So it's extremely common for folks to write off people who are witches and believe that they are witches as being psychotic. I believe that this comes from a lack of understanding of what it means to be a witch.
Uh-huh.
Judging folks who are witches based on improper standards. If someone comes to you and tells you that they're a witch, you don't automatically assume that they believe that they're going to be flying on broomsticks.
Right.
Someone tells you that part of their, you know, religious practice is calling on the spirits of their ancestors and having a chat with them, you don't automatically jump to the conclusion that it's, you know, a visual and auditory hallucination.
Right.
Because this is not the case. When witches operate under these, you know, kind of parameters, it's always in a spiritual sense, right? So we ask for these experiences, we ask for them, and then we dismiss them, and that's pretty much it. We know the difference between what is real and what is, you know, the spiritual, you know, side of things. Now, for most of us, and this might be a bold statement, we are always in our religious kind of state.
Right.
But when it comes to the psychosis that's, you know, mental illness, what is it that we believe about the experience that we're having?
Well, that it's real.
Yes. And it's something scary or something, you know, to put it more simply, we want it to happen. This is this is how we affirm our connection to life. Our understanding of life, death, and rebirth, the afterlife, the spiritual, is very different than, you know, the perceptions that this country was built on, right?
Right.
So our faith teaches us that we still have access to the spirits of the dead, whereas other faiths don't teach that, which is why when we do have these experiences, we understand them to be powerful, desirable, enjoyable, whereas other faiths teach it that it's not something that can happen.
Right.
And so my way of talking about this is not completely developed, so if it sounds a little sparse, I and underdeveloped, it's because it is sparse and underdeveloped.
Okay.
I'm still working on.
You're still working on your elevator pitch.
Yeah, so I'm still working on how to, you know, bring it to the APA.
The APA. What is the APA?
The American Psychological Association.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Like, are you seriously working on that? That would be really awesome.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And I'm also looking at gathering appropriate spiritual resources from across many faiths to support what I'm saying.
Right.
So I'm not looking, like, I'm purposefully avoiding the use of Christian religious talk and iconography, and I'm purposely going for Celtic, Druid, Egyptian, Norse, Buddhist, Hindi, Aztec,
pagan.
Voodoo kind of, yeah. I want to use that iconography along with the timeline of it, you know, being around forever.
Right.
As a way to kind of filter through what I'm talking about. Because at the basis of the point that I'm trying to make is even witches can tell when someone is psychotic.
Yes.
Which is how we can know that being a witch in and of itself is not psychosis.
Correct.
Right? So, like, pagans, if someone who's psychotic enters the circle, like, we can tell that they're functioning with a different kind of wiring than everyone else in the circle.
Yeah, they have a different deck. They're not using the same playing cards as everyone else.
Yeah. So that's one of the quote-unquote criteria that I'm working with here. One of my friends, that sounds awful.
It is. I have had this cold for 2 weeks now, and let me tell you, no amount of tea I drink, no amount of cough drops I take is helping. It's getting really a pain in the butt, and it's worse at night. It seems to be okay, like when I'm at work, but once I settle down for the night, it really agitates. And if I try to sleep, well, I'm up half the night coughing. So sleep is out the window.
Awful.
Yeah. And I think it's a viral thing because I don't have a fever. So I can't just take an antibiotic and it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't confirmed this with a doctor because I don't have the money. Like half of Americans, I'm broke.
Like 99% of Americans are broke?
Yeah, like 99% of Americans. I'm broke. I'm flat broke. So I don't have the money to go to a doctor. So I've literally had to self-care and, like, muddle through on my own with this. And it sucks, let me tell you what.
I can imagine.
But you make do with what you got. I eat chicken soup and... You know, like cough drops. I take a little bit of cough medicine, maybe.
Chicken soup.
Yeah, we need chicken soup for the Wiccan soul, man. That would be an awesome book to write.
Yeah, I don't think we could get the rights to the title Chicken Soup, though.
Probably not.
But we never know.
We could try.
Word.
It was
do you have any other questions? Or... Huh?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I think we've really covered it. I will ask if Afterphobe has any questions, if he's listening. I don't know if he's listening. He's probably preoccupied with the eclipse. And we totally skipped over...
that window, actually. We skipped over what?
We skipped over the half-hour mark. Like, it totally ran away with me. I'm sitting here, and I'm working on the Order of Paladins patch for myself. And I totally lost track of time. So, yeah. Is the moon red? Is it, like, orange?
there are clouds now, so I can't even see where the moon is in the sky. So it's completely eclipsed, I think.
That's a pity.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to see what I saw, though. So I know what's happening. So.
Yeah, I guess that's the most interesting.
A full moon lunar eclipse in Aries.
Yep.
So, one of my concurrent projects with the Order of Paladins, I'm going to be working on writing a Corellian Novena prayer.
Awesome! So that's like a 9-day thing?
So I'm going to work on two versions. One for emergencies and one for, you know, extended kind of work. So the one for emergencies will be over the course of 9 hours. So it will be a prayer ritual that you do every hour on the hour for 9 hours straight.
Okay.
And then the other one will be every day at the same time every day for 9 hours.
Wow.
So
like 9 hours every day?
Yep. No, 1 hour a day for 9 days is the extended one. And then 9 hours for one day.
Oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense.
So.
Wow, I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. So,
what would you use a novena prayer for?
Anything and everything. So there's a novena there's an established novena that any person can use for like. Okay, so if you're a Catholic, then you know what a novena prayer is. Basically, you pick a saint, that depends on what, you know, they govern, you do their novena, and, you know, they grant you a petition based on, you know, who they are. So for miracles, you go to St. Jude and you use his novena, and he will do a miracle for you. Being Corellian, we don't have saints that we work with. Right?
Right.
So this was going to be based solely on tapping into the power of the crystal web and asking our tradition's ancestors to grant petitions for us.
Wow. That's going to be something really awesome, you know, and unique. My goodness, unique.
Yeah. So that's what I'm working on the ancestors with. They granted me a few dreams. And they whispered a few kind of chants and rhymes for me to go off of. So I really appreciate the fact that they're with me on this project. I just want to put that out there. I love that my tradition ancestors are really active in the work that I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It feels good. It feels good to have their support on such a unique new project, because to my knowledge there isn't anything like this in our, you know, in our Corellian litany.
That is correct. There is nothing like it to date.
So,
because I can speak with authority on that, because I've been in the tradition 10 years and I've never seen anything like that. So
the word. So that is what I'm working on. And I'm working on creating one of the 9-day candles that has our Corellian sigil, the Corellium, on it.
Cool.
So the plan is to create 9 of these candles, or excuse me, 10 of these candles, and send them to the Council of Elders. And hopefully they can agree to kind of testing out this novena, and, you know, hopefully I can get Lord Don and, you know, all the elders to kind of approve it and add it to, you know, some of the things that we do, kind of adopt it as one of the tradition's workings.
Yeah, that would be really super. So you've been busy.
Kind of. Not as busy as you.
What do you mean, kind of?
Not
as busy
as
me. What do you mean? You're busier than I am. You drive, like, 2 hours a day to work. Oh, my God.
It's not even that. Like, I drive an hour and 20 minutes to work and an hour
okay.
and 20 minutes back. So, like, that's literally the same amount of time that you drive to work.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I'll give you that.
And then you've got this Paladin's General thing, the general going on, which is a huge responsibility.
Yeah, it really is. And let me tell you what, I am really kind of intimidated by it, and I'm afraid to make a mistake. So it kind of has me, like, frozen in place with developing lessons and, you know, getting everything started. But I'm sure with your help, because you are my second in command, and I'm going to be relying on you for help and for encouragement and for, like, okay, Liz, yes, this is cool. Okay, no, this is a bad idea, that kind of thing. Because my perceptions are kind of skewed because I've got all these disorders going on, and yeah. So you're going to be my sounding board, and we're going to make this rock. It's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. You've already been so open-minded to the ideas that I've had. It's super encouraging, and it's really motivating to see how you've just been so just, what's the word I'm looking for? I really can't think tonight. But you've just been so supportive of the ideas that I've had.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I would love to see you implement as many ideas as you can safely have, you know? Like, even if we have to, like, write a list of these ideas and then maybe come back to them at a later date because you have so many of them.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious that you just mentioned writing a list, and we talked about keeping lists as a...
I know, right? I think that's funny.
I don't think you have a personality disorder, though.
No, I do not think that I have a personality disorder either, or OCD for that matter, because I am, like, the least OCD person I know. I am not organized. I am ADHD. I don't think ADHD and OCD are comorbid disorders. I think they're, like, the opposite of each other, almost.
Yeah, I would love to see how that would work together in one person.
I would
truly just kind of, like, that person would be so miserable. They would be scattered everywhere, but also ridiculously organized. Like, that, they would be so miserable.
I would hate to see that. I would be pained to see that. That would just be awful.
Yeah.
I mean, having ADHD alone and having OCD alone, but together, good God, no, please. Don't know. I can't even think of how would that work.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. So yeah, what should we talk about for next month's episode?
Well, we've got your whole DSM-5 to go through, man. So open a page and pick something.
Eating disorders.
Eating disorders? Okay, we will do eating disorders. And so give us, like, a little sneak peek. What are eating disorders?
Disorders of eating.
Haha, very funny.
So, what comes to mind initially, obviously bulimia and anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
So, binge eating, purging, not eating. So I don't want to give too much away. But I think from now on I'll have a more organized way of discussing these things. So
okay.
I think I'll talk about the diagnostic criteria, social and cultural factors, which gender they have a tendency to affect more. Which is interesting for eating disorders because initially we thought that they were, you know, they affected women highly. But research is showing now that men are equally affected by eating disorders. And I think it has something to do with the way that we are all kind of increasing our objectification of the male body.
Right.
So, whereas there was, before there was less attention to what the male looked like in TV and in movies, and a sexy man was, you know, was something very different. Like, now we're seeing a lot of men with ripped abs and they're shirtless everywhere. And, you know, there's a definite kind of, there's a definite kind of what sexy men look like. That's everywhere we see it. And I think that that is having a big kind of effect on the rise in eating disorders in men. So we'll be talking about, you know, the social kind of factors that play into eating disorders. I'll talk about treatments and I'll talk about prognosis. That is what people can expect if they have an eating disorder or any kind of disorder and they get treatment for it. So
cool. So
yeah,
what date shall we set up?
Ooh, good question. Let me look at my calendar.
It has to be any date other than, hold on, let me check.
Do you want to do it after the parliament?
Yes, after the parliament, please. So let's do it on the 25th. How's that look?
The 25th of October?
Yes.
Sure, let's do that.
Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, we will be having Phoenix back with us on the 25th of October to talk about eating disorders. And we welcome your questions and comments to about eating disorders or any other disorders that we've discussed or not to sacreddivergenceradio@gmail.com, lizhamilton88@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Facebook at Sacred Divergence Radio. You can find me on Twitter at VelocipedeLiz. And we do also have a Twitter account for the radio station, S Divergence. But I have to find the password for it, so I apologize if you've at-tweeted me and I haven't gotten back to you. So sorry. So sad. I know. It's the ADHD. I swear. I can't keep track of anything.
That tickles me.
And, of course, you know, I was sharing the account for a bit there with one of my former students because she had been helping me host every week. And, you know, she would go on and, like, at tweet, hey, we're talking about this now, so come and listen. You know, so it's not like I have, like, a personal password. It was this randomized kind of, you know, I love kittens 99 sort of thing, you know. No, it's not I Love Kittens 99. I have a person in the background. He's like, oh, there you go. That's it. And I'm like, no, it's not it. I just made that up.
You know what else we have to do?
What?
We have to continue discussing our book.
Oh, yes, we have to do that. My goodness. Okay. So when shall we discuss the next few chapters of our book? And what book is it that we're reading?
Seeking the Mystery.
Seeking the Mystery, yes. Pagan...
An Introduction to Pagan Theologies.
Introduction to Pagan Theologies, right. I have not been reading it. I have been a bad pagan reader. I have been so busy with work and with being sick. It's basically being sick that's had me down for the count for the last 2 weeks. So ask me if I've done anything for the last 2 weeks, the answer is no, because I've been spending, and my friend over here can attest to this, I have been spending all of my time on the couch, sleeping, on my days off.
Fair enough. So, we can do it the 1st of November.
Okay.
If you would like. And if you haven't read if you haven't read by then, I can just pull the line and get you caught up. Because
yeah,
I've read the book twice.
Oh, you've read it twice. My goodness. Any particular reason for reading it twice?
It's a good book. I use it as a reference for a lot of things. And it breaks things down in a pretty nice way. So if I come across a concept in another book, I will refer back to that book to see if the concept is in there. And it gives me a good basis for beginning to understand harder concepts.
Right.
So that's why I've read that book so many times. It's also got exercises in it that I like to refresh myself on.
Awesome.
So, and it's a really short book, so like reading it twice is literally not, for me, is not that difficult.
Right.
After having wrapped up grad school, that book is like a comic book for me. It's really just an adorable little pamphlet in my eyes.
I can only imagine. Oh my goodness. So yeah, it's been wonderful having you on.
I do enjoy coming on here, spending time with you.
And these episodes are counting towards our service hours, our community service hours. So yay for us. Mm. We completed an hour and 45 minutes together. Yay. Only
nice. Mental health only public service announcements.
Yes. Yes, only 58 hours and 45 minutes to go.
Sweet.
For the year.
Sweet.
Yes, and I will be getting mine done by doing radio. That's how I've decided I'm going to do mine.
Nice.
So every week will count as an hour. And then I only need to find 8 more hours because there's 52 weeks in a year. I only need to find 8 more hours doing something else.
I'm sure you can figure something out.
Yeah, I'll serve like at a soup kitchen or something, you know. A couple hours here, a couple hours there.
I think I'm going to start doing on-call counseling for the crisis services again.
Cool.
And they require...
That'd be nice.
Yeah, they require... I want to say they require 2 shifts. They require 8 hours a month.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you'll rack up some really fast then.
Yeah. So and it keeps me in line with what I feel my calling is. And working with the on-call kind of rape crisis counselors really is how I got my start in the counseling and kind of therapy. So being true to my origins while figuring out how to be a paladin and figuring out how to teach others how to be a paladin is really something that's become important to me since I, you know, started this journey with you.
Truer words have never been spoken. And, you know, I think it's really important to be true to our roots, like as individuals, because they're where we come from. They're how we started. They're how we began. You know,
yes,
and
no matter where the branches grow to, the roots are always there.
Exactly, and they are the key. They are the key. I think that should be like one of our quotes somehow.
Sure. Sounds about right.
We'll figure it out. So, everyone, stay tuned for... Oh, you know what? We should do an episode entirely on the Paladins. Like, once
Sounds
we get things
right.
really rolling...
Sounds
and we can hash
right.
out ideas, we can ask people what they think, and, you know, this whole big thing. So, I don't know that we'll have many more people other than Afterfov in the chat room, because...
I know one of my friends is listening, so I want to give
awesome.
A shout-out to my buddy Jordan. Hey, boy, how you doing? Thanks
that's
for listening.
Great. I bet he's the guest that's in our chat room. Guest 3111. Totally random. I have no idea if that's the right person or not. But that's really awesome that he's listening in. I'm really glad.
Yeah. He's a good
and
kid.
Just... Huh?
I said he's a good kid.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah.
I was being very condescending with that statement.
Oh.
Calling my kid. That's kind of rude.
Well, how old is he? It depends on how old he is.
3, I want to say.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that was really condescending. Shame on you. What a bad example of a paladin you are. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. 22.
I'm totally kidding. Okay, yeah, 22. That's not bad. I mean, depending on... Well, how old are you?
27.
Okay, yeah, I could see how you might see him as, like, a little kid brother. I mean, I have a brother who's, like, 21, 22, and I see him as a kid, and I'm 27, so...
I will never view Jordan Cooper as my brother.
Oh, okay.
That's not meant to sound like an insult.
It kind of did, actually.
It did, right? Like, so just to clarify, that's not an insult. But, yeah, he and I could never be brothers.
Why not?
I don't know. Good question.
Anything
this
is possible.
This is not something that I ever thought about.
Anything is possible.
I suppose
so
you are correct.
I'm kind of sad that we missed this eclipse. It's in the
damn
final
clouds.
Phases now. I know, damn clouds. And they haven't shown it on TV either, and I'm really kind of sad about that. I wish they would have shown it, like, later when the eclipse was actually, like, fully eclipsed instead of in the beginning phases. But whatever.
Yeah, I saw it more than halfway eclipse. I saw it in probably like the last third.
Okay, so I had a comment behind me. They are playing in a dome. Well, the dome has a roof that is retractable, right? No? Okay, well then they can go outside with one of their cameras. I mean, the cameras do travel, I'm sure.
Word.
So anyways... It was great having you here, and I'm really glad to call you my brother.
Absolutely, me. I'm glad to have you as my sister.
And I love you bunches, but I think I need to go take some more cough drops and go to sleep now because I'm really tired. I have to work in the morning.
Yeah,
I have to
me
work
too.
At, what time do I work tomorrow? Let's see. I work at... What's tomorrow? Monday, 11:45 tomorrow. So I have to be up and out of the house by 9:30.
Mm-hmm. I'm in at 7:30 tomorrow, so.
Oh, snap, man.
I'll be up at 5, on the road at 6, at
yeah,
work at 7:30.
Sounds familiar.
So.
Sounds very familiar. That's what I did today. I was up at 5:30, out the door by 5:45, on the road by 5:50, because I take a minute to put on some Pandora and make sure that I'm, like, awake and caffeinated and stuff like that. So anyways...
Well, I do pray that Hypnos lays a nice, sloppy, gloomy kiss on your forehead and you get plenty of rest.
Aw, well, thank you so much. I hope that, too, because I really need to sleep, especially since I'm so sick. And before we go, I want to apologize for last week's awful show. Oh, my God, it was horrible. Don't listen to it, please, because, and this is, like, the only time I will ever say don't listen to my show, because it really was awful. I was on the road, and my phone has been acting up. I had to work until 9:30, 10 o'clock. So I didn't have time to come home and use Skype or anything like that. And my phone has really been horrible to me lately. It's been restarting on its own, and that's just not working out well. So I'm so sorry, people, but last week's show was horrible. Please tune in to all of my other episodes, except for episode 64.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, we shall see you next month, my brother, or any
later.
Other time you want to pop your head in here. And let me go ahead and play our outro. And blessed be.
Blessed be.
Woohoo, we're rolling on out of here. Blessings, everyone. And we will see you next week at 10 p.m. right here on Sacred Divergence Radio.
Thank you for listening to Sacred Divergence Radio with your hostess, Reverend Elizabeth, and friends on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Have a topic for us to discuss on air? Connect with Reverend Elizabeth at sacreddivergenceradio@gmail.com and on Twitter at SDivergence with hashtag topic hat. See you next week at 10 p.m. Eastern here on Sacred Divergence Radio and the Spiritual Unity Radio Network.